The great polar explorer, Roald Amundsen, stood by himself on the frozen Arctic shore, staring into the distance. He was 53 years old, but looked 75, and bankrupt. On the ice in front of him, the men of the Amundsen-Ellsworth polar flight had broken open the large, long wooden crates that contained the two flying boats. Now their job was to reassemble the craft, labouring in sub-zero temperatures. With little more than a block and tackle, the coal miners from the Kings Bay mine ready to provide the muscle power when they needed it. Nearby, a journalist and photographer recorded their every move. Beautiful white mountains penned Amundsen in on three sides. Their glaciers glinted in the May sunlight. For a moment, the 22 houses of the mining village looked more like holiday cottages. The Arctic smiles now, but behind the silent hills is death, another journalist would later write, and he would be proved right. Out in the bay, the sea was filled with great chunks of ice. Beyond stretched the endless, empty ice pack, known as the Arctic Desert, a huge empty hole on the map of the world, roughly the size of Canada, that had never before been explored. Somewhere on the other side was Alaska. Men quickly became invisible from the air in this brilliant white landscape. If their primitive flying machines descended and they couldn't get back up, then there was almost no likelihood that they would be found. Even if someone knew where they were, there would be a good chance that they had strayed beyond the range of their would-be rescuers, particularly if they were the crew of a dirigible. These lighter-than-air craft could stay in the air for days at a time and fly much farther than their fixed-wing aircraft rivals. The sea ice that makes up the ice pack could be many feet thick, and then suddenly only half an inch thick, ready to plunge the unwary, or too hasty, explorer into the frozen water underneath. Nighttime might not bring much relief to the explorer either. The cracking and creaking of the ice could keep many a man from sleeping, no matter how exhausted they were, their bodies braced for the moment when they, and their tent, might suddenly be plunged into the icy water below. Then there was the disorientation. When they woke up, they could be as many as 20 miles from where they had gone to sleep. To crash out there would in all likelihood mean death, though surprisingly, this didn't seem to bother the average adventurer. This was their choice, to be noticed, to be remembered. Glory and fame was what most of them had come there for, and one way or another, they were determined to get it. Welcome to the Svalbard Archipelago. To locate these mountainous islands on a map, you first have to find Scotland, then trace your finger up past Iceland, Norway, and Greenland. From the map, it looks as though you could swim, or even march, from the islands to Greenland, Canada, Alaska, or Russia. But, of course, you can't. The distances are still vast, the passages grim and unwelcoming. All Amundsen needed, he kept telling himself as he stood out there, was one last big paycheck. It was 1925, 20 years since the Norwegian had become the first man to successfully navigate his way through the Northwest Passage, the sea route from the Arctic to the Pacific Ocean. Sir John Franklin and his 128 men had disappeared around 60 years previously to this, trying to make the same journey in two old warships. Amundsen had done it slowly with six men over 3 years in an old fishing boat. In 2014 and 2016, the wrecks of HMS Erebus and Terror were finally discovered. While the fate of the survivors is still clouded in mystery, it is now thought that the expedition had managed to explore the unexplored part of the Northwest Passage. However, the ships and their ghosts have one more duty to perform to their country. The shipwrecks are helping Canada reinforce its claim to the Arctic in the face of competition from countries like Russia.